Literally, I only get because it's like a Bible and it takes me forever to read it, right? And I love it. So I'm like at the airport and I'm flicking through Vogue, and this was like a few months ago. And all of a sudden, there's a full expose on my brother. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, that's Tom. And it was just basically how he's completely reinvented New Balance, the dad sneaker, and made it what it is. This is American Vogue,
I was
by
like,
the way.
that's amazing because it did used to be a total dad brand.
That's yeah.
Be
Yeah,
like,
but that's
oh,
so cool. And how they've managed to sustain this like rejuvenation of New Balance because they haven't sold out to anyone, and they haven't. I mean, like, I remember years ago him being like, oh, the Soho House Group want to pay us loads of money to put New Balance on all their stuff. And I was like, well, that's so cool. You should do it. He was like, absolutely fucking not. Anyway, and I was like, holy shit. So obviously put it in the family WhatsApp group. And I was like, hi, Tom in American Vogue. And he was like, oh yeah, I forgot that was out. And I was like, what the fuck? Like calling him like the second coming of sneakers. And he was like, yeah, it's pretty cool. I was like, it's pretty fucking cool, Tom.
that's
But
amazing.
then it's amazing. I'm like, as if my brother is that cool. And then I was like messaging him, and I was messaging into the family group, and I was like, oh my God, like Sis is performing at Glastonbury. I'm so excited. I really want to get tickets and go, but they're so expensive. And I'm already going to Taylor Swift. And he was like, oh my God, yeah. Like I went to her Grammys after party. And I was like, how is this cool? Anyway, how's
Oh.
Emma?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
I mean, fucking furious. I'm on my period. I hate everyone. You know what, guys? Co-parenting's hard, right? Especially when James Haskell is your ex. There's no other way to say it. It's really hard. And I pat myself on the back every day. Every day with how fucking badass I am being at it and managing it for Bodhi, all for Bodhi. Because if we didn't have Bodhi, we would not know. It's all for Bodhi. And I'm like, go on, Chloe. Because I'm an Aggie-less bitch. In case people haven't realized, I'm not Aggie. So I'm just like, go on, Chloe, smashing it, babe. And then, I put up some nice pictures of us taking it Sunday lunch, me and my family. Because I like these photos. It's my family. It's my child. It's her dad. It's my family. My brother was there. My mum and dad were there. And obviously, just underneath loads of really nice comments, and then loads of comments like, I knew it was fake. I knew that it was all a publicity stunt. I knew you guys would get back together. Why don't you just get back together? It's so much better for your child. And I'm like, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. How many times have I said we are not together anymore? We're going to co-parent for the sake of our child. So stop telling me it's a fucking publicity stunt. There's no show on TV right now. We're not back together. We are co-parenting. And please don't tell me that you want us to get back together because you're telling me that you want me to have a miserable fucking future. Fuck off. And then I got pissed off, right? And then I ranted about it last night. And then I got over it. And then I woke up this morning and some girl had messaged me, and she was like, to be fair to your following, Chloe, you are very contradictory on social media. If you don't want people to think you and James are back together, then you shouldn't post photos of you and James. And I was like, you're a little bitch. So I blocked her. And now here we are. And I cried in the gym twice today. So clearly I'm having a great time.
Oh, honestly, it just shows how mature you are, though, and that you can put like your own feelings aside for Bodhi. And the fact that everyone has an opinion on it is just so stupid. I think it shows a lot to be like, yeah, we're not together, but you're always going to be in each other's life.
Yeah. But this is what really annoys me, though. So, it is contradictory. If you don't want people to think this, then you shouldn't post this. And I'm like, whose life? What's my hair doing? Whose life isn't contradictory? Can somebody help me there? Because mine sure as fuck is, like, every day, every day.
Think that's contradictory.
Like,
What?
James.
Oh, I'm sorry that nobody else has like is mature enough to actually like he's the father of your child.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Anyway, look, sorry for my rant, guys. I'm obviously Emma. This is the first like real conversation. I've been ignoring everyone who's been calling me and texting me because I'm so angry. And now here we all are.
The comments here are great. Right. Sarah's like, in the words of RuPaul, if they're not paying your bills, pay those bitches no mind.
Here, here,
And
here, here,
then
Paul.
in classic Sue style, I read some of those comments. People need to learn to shut the fuck up.
Yeah,
Fuck
exactly.
you.
Exactly. I just hate the culture now of like blaming the person. Like, just of people like, well, just turn the comments off, which I did in the end, but I shouldn't have to. I should be able to post a nice photo of my family without people being like, I knew it was fake. I knew you'd get back together. Why don't you just get back together? What about your child? Shut up, shut up, shut up. Just let it be.
Feel you, Chloe. And on the topic of periods, do you recommend working out around your cycle? At the gym right now, massively struggled with the workout, longer rest days, I imagine periods, and dropped the weight as feeling awful, tired, lethargic, and super weak, which is usually how I feel before my period.
It depends. Emma.
It completely depends on the individual. If you're like, oh, I feel like crap, I don't enjoy the workouts, and it's just like puts me in a bad mood, don't do it. Other people find like, okay, I might need to drop the weight a little bit, but it still gives me a bit of a buzz. I did something. Something is always better than nothing, and I feel quite good like having done it, even though it wasn't the best workout ever. So it really kind of depends. Like, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, if you took two or three sessions off, over a month, assuming that you work out quite frequently, like, is that going to make a huge difference? No. But you also might just want to be like, yeah, okay, I'm going to reduce the like expectation here, but I'm going to go in, I'm going to do something, I'm going to see how I feel, see what I can lift that day. And if I do half a session, then significantly better than not doing anything. And then to add on top of that, often what happens at this same time is your cravings go up, your mood goes down. Like you've put here, I feel lethargic, I feel like super weak, you have this reduced mood and you're a bit aggravated and stuff. It is the perfect like combination of things to comfort eat. So if you then decide not to go to the gym, and then you kind of fall into the mindset of, well, I've not bothered working out, so there's no point eating well, and I'm wanting this comfort food, and you've now got the extra hour that you would have spent at the gym and getting to and from the gym, that's normally like hanging around at home instead. All that contributes to probably more likely going off track with your diet.
Yeah, hear, hear. Look, you might not have the best workout in the world, but it's always worth going and trying. Like, I didn't today. It started out all right. There was a fit guy in the gym. Started out all right, and then I just ended up voice noting Emma and crying. Like, and it's not, and it obviously when that happens, you kind of you lose that momentum, you lose that oomph. But I finished my set of what was dumbbell chest press, actually hit a new PB, which at that point I was just maintaining, which was good for me. I did 16 kg dumbbells. Emma knows, for me that's really good.
That's really good.
Yeah, but I was just like, at that point I was like,
When we trained, Chloe picked up like the eights or something. I was like, no.
Emma was like, absolutely. So that was good. I just finished it. I'd done enough at that point, and I just went and finished off with a really like 10 minutes of cardio. Not the best session ever, but I did it. And actually, you know what? I've been very bloated and uncomfortable and pain since I had Bodhi. Like, my period pains are different. It's like they're lower down. I can't even put like a tampon in without being like the pain. So anyway, exercise actually really helps that for me now. And it doesn't always. Okay, I remember my PE teacher being like, "You should exercise. It'll really help with cramps." And it never fucking did. But actually it did. I noticed pretty much as soon as I left the gym that like I felt a lot like less heavy, less full. So that was nice. And but yeah, I mean, look, I think it's always nice to go try and just do a 5 minute warm up on the cross trainer, and you might find that you end up being on there 25 minutes, and you might find that you go into that you a song hits you, your caffeine hits you, and you storm into the weight section to, show off. I mean, you never know. So always give it a go and see how you end up.
I think that's always the mindset you should take. If you're like, I really can't bother to do a workout, reduce the expectation. Just be like, I'm going to go into the gym and do 5 minutes on the cross trainer. That's the box ticked. If I then want to go home, I'll go home. It almost never happens, right? Even if it did, you've still done something. But if, like, I don't think any of our clients have ever done that and then been like, oh, I'm just literally going to do the 5 minutes and then leave. Normally, you end up doing more.
100%.
And yeah. Sense. So I, before I came onto this, I was doing a EIQ grads lecture on adherence. I
Nice.
was looking at what the research says about adherence. And it was like quite interesting. Like, this is a really obvious statement, but one of the biggest reviews on this was like, the degree to which an individual sticks to their diet is a more important factor in weight loss success than the type of diet an individual sticks to, right? As we
Obviously,
kind of like. But I still think some people get so caught up on,
yeah.
should it be low carb, or is it okay that I'm having this or this timing or this? You just think, as long as you can stick to it, it doesn't matter if you've got the perfect diet, if you're not sticking to it, it's absolutely irrelevant.
Yeah.
So the other thing that I was thinking of as you were talking about exercise there was, there was one randomized control trial that I looked at, which is really a really hard area to study, because when you're looking at adherence, you obviously need trials to be long enough to actually follow them up for long enough. So this was one of the few studies that had like decent amount of participants. There were like 322 moderately obese participants, 2 year follow-up, split into three groups. So low fat group, low carb group, Mediterranean diet group. Their main outcome was looking at compliance, right? I'll tell you the results of it, but what I really want to talk about is the impact of physical activity. But compliance was highest on low fat, then Mediterranean, then low carb, which was interesting. But this was interesting. So among the people who were physically active, 44% ate less after exercising. And I know we
Most
talked quite a
people
lot
who were
about,
physically active, 44% ate less after exercising. Right. Yeah. Okay.
but and actually I should add to that, only 10% of people ended up eating more.
That's
So most
interesting.
people had like no effect, right?
Yeah.
Well, not most people, but like about 30 whatever percent of people had like no effect. So it was more common to eat less after exercise than to eat more after exercise, is the point of this. And I know that a lot of people think that they'll probably just end up eating more if they exercise. It's kind of like a common thing that's pushed a little bit in the industry. And I know we've spoken about that, but we always caveat it with like the right dose of exercise, the right dose of activity, but won't or really shouldn't make you eat more. Everyone has an individual.
Really, it's really people doing who are already active, going from active to super active. And that's quite a small bracket of people, but that's when it starts to happen. Anyway, carry on, Em.
So I mean, that was really the point I wanted to make, is that if you, we also know the impact of like how you think of things and what you expect to happen and how influential that is. So if you're like, oh, whenever I exercise, I always eat more, then you probably will end up eating more. So I just thought it was an interesting thing to point out that actually most people after exercise will eat less, not more.
I love that. Always good things to touch on. Well, pretty much, and then kind of like a 50% ish of like people that just were the same, right? Were just level.
Yeah, about 40% of people are just normal. Yeah.
Really interesting. Love that. Thanks, Sam. Thanks, Tech Emma.
I'm just trying to see if there was anything else that was, most of it's quite obvious, but like the, okay, actually, one other thing I wanted to bring up, because this comes up a lot with like, when should you lower your calories? And this said, dietary adherence is strongly associated with rates of weight loss. So the quicker you lose weight, as in like the more results you're seeing, like the higher the adherence, which kind of makes sense, you know, like people who actually see results are more likely to stick to the things that are getting the results. But then it says it was adversely affected by the severity of caloric restriction.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, okay, well, how do you get fast weight loss? Drop your calories really low, but how do you, like,
Maintain
if you do
it.
that, then you don't adhere to the diet, right? And this is why we always talk about how it's a fine line. Like, we're not here to have you. I know some coaches are like, be in the smallest deficit possible. No, like, we want you to
No.
see results, you know?
Yeah.
But also, like, you can't just keep dropping your calories. There's a balance, right? I always like to use the marathon running analogy. If you want to get your best marathon time, you need to run at a certain pace. You don't
Yeah.
want to sprint at the start, but you also don't want to go too slow at the start, or you're never going to finish, right? Or it's going to take you ages. It's the same with calories. Like, you're trying to find that optimal range for you that is going to allow you to create over time the biggest deficit, because the issue with dropping your calories too low is you then don't adhere to them. And actually, then you create a smaller deficit and then
Yeah.
you're not getting the results. So basically, if you take that top line of dietary adherence is strongly associated with rates of weight loss, if you actually want the fastest weight loss, it's not dropping your calories too low. Like, that will
Yeah.
not be the fastest weight loss over time. And what we do and our approach will, like, we're actually not trying to slow things down at all. We're just having a bigger picture view. We don't care how much weight you lose in a month. We want to know how much weight you're going to lose and keep off
Yeah.
for the rest of your life.
Yeah, and that's again full circle back to the carb study and data that you referenced, Emma, is that a really nice way to get people to lose weight quite quickly is to say, let's start by going lower carb. When that starts to happen and they start to lose weight and then they start to see visually that they're getting more comfortable in your body, we want to try and then reintroduce and up that and show them that actually, and especially at that point, if they're slightly leaner and they've built some muscle, they'll look better. They'll look better with more glycogen in their muscle stores. The only caveat to me saying that is that we obviously don't want to stamp carb fear on anyone. So we have to be very, very careful about that. But the same thing can be said for calories. You know, we talk about coming into maintenance being the hardest thing. We could go low. Okay, let's say you could successfully diet on 1700, but you're getting away with it by the skin of your teeth on 1500, and you're very close to the goal. And you say to Emma and I, like, I only have like 2, 3 pounds left to lose, and I'm really close and I'm really happy. Like, can I carry? We'd be like, yeah, fine. And then we talk about coming back into maintenance. This is when you really need coaches. When we reintroduce, like I say, with the carbs, when we reintroduce the calories and we start to come back up, and you need someone who's objectively going to be like, look, you look the same. You weigh a little bit more because you're eating more, and food weighs. It's mass, it's volume, it weighs. You weigh a little bit more. That's normal. Look, you're starting to physically look better, and now you're eating 1800. And it really helps. And this is why we really encourage anyone. We say this all the time. You come here and you get fat loss, which most people do. Great. Don't fuck off when you're done because you think you're done, because it is very likely that you are going to freak yourself out and trip yourself up coming back into maintenance. And then you're going to come back here. So just stay. Let us get you there and show you that also maintenance is very flexible and it fluctuates with you, and teach you about that before you decide to fly the coop.
I couldn't agree more. And if you've come here and you're like, oh, well, you know, you guys said it'd be the last diet that I ever need or the last diet I ever do, that's only if you stay for maintenance. You've all
Yeah.
lost fat before. We never really have clients who are like, I've never lost fat before. It's
Yeah.
like it works for you for a period of time. Like you've stuck to something for a period of time, over restrictive, but you've not learned how to maintain it. That's the difference here. That's what we want to focus on. So you do need to be like, rather than like, oh, I'm at my quote unquote goal weight, or I'm happy with, you know, where I am physically, then you need to be like, right, okay, well, actually, this has happened before.
Yeah.
But what's the difference this time? I'm going to stay and I'm going to learn how to maintain it.
Yep.
Other interesting thing about carbs is it did mention increased adherence on low carb or ketogenic diets because of the reduction in hunger,
But
which
not long term.
Well, so that was just the review stated that it was like there was better adherence on a ketogenic diet. That was just one randomized control trial I was looking at. I mean, I
Right.
think it's quite like equivocal whether that would be a good thing. I think it's also just very individual. Like, remember, all of that research is looking at averages. There'll be people within that who did insanely well on low carb, and there'll be people within that who absolutely hated it, felt really restricted. And a lot of it is individual preference.
Yeah, and you know, there's studies and counter studies for everything. I mean, I was talking about this yesterday during a lunch meeting about sweet. Obviously, there's evidence to show that sweetness can increase your sweet tooth, your craving of sweet things. But the biggest and best study on sweetness and specifically weight loss that's been done shows that people who had those kind of diet drinks and those chewing gums and stuff in their diet, they lost more weight. Because they felt like they had they didn't feel like they had a calorie-free substitute to turn to. And everyone goes, yeah, but it showed that it increased. And it's like, yeah, but there's a bigger and better study that shows that it leads to more weight loss. So there's always a study, there's always a counter study, and you always have to weigh up
Yeah, you
essentially
always have to
what the
like,
most relevant thing is.
yeah, like, see, but you can also take those little things. So, say someone, I don't know, has a sugar sweetened beverage, or not sugar, sorry, a sweetener in there, oh, you know, and then they crave more sweet things,
Yeah.
but getting their sweet thing craving from things that have no caloric value, then they're not a huge real like problem with that in regards to weight loss, right? I
Yeah.
think most people like having some kind of sweet thing within their diet, you know, like it massively helps.
Oh, hugely. And I drink more Diet Coke unless I'm hungover. I drink more Diet Coke when I'm not drinking alcohol in it. I'd much rather be drinking 2 to 3 cans of Diet Coke a day than 2 to 3 glasses of wine a day. I mean, one's definitely going to have a huge impact on my health. And one, it's questionable. Two, absolutely not. I mean, two cans, definitely not. But you know, it's so also a lot of the time you've got to ask yourself, like, yeah, but what's the better option here with where I am? And then we can deal with Diet Coke later on. I mean, I'm not dealing with that. I'm fine with my Diet Coke. Thank you, though.
Yeah, oh no, I mean, like a lot of people are like, oh, well, isn't that really bad for you? And it's like, well, what's the alternative? If people are going from full fat Coke to Diet Coke, you know,
Brilliant.
like, I think we always compare ourselves to this like perfect diet, which no one actually has and no one actually sticks to. So what are you stressed about? What improvements can you make from where you are that are actually realistic for you to stick to?
Yep.
That's going to get you far better results.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Julie's just saying, Chloe, angry, just what I need. Can you give me a good talking to about warm-ups and warm downs? I do walk 15 minutes to the gym, but I guess at 49 and not done much for the past 3 years, it's pretty important.
What does she mean? Warming up? Yeah. So, there is actually a stretching file, which is on the Facebook group and wherever else it is. And basically, I just talk you through, and I do it before, as soon as I get in the gym, the first thing I do is put all my shit down and I warm up. And it just takes you through everything from like ankles, calves, hamstrings, knees, quads, glutes. And it takes me all of 2.5 minutes max to do. And it's just little bouncy movements as you work your way up your body, triceps, chest, back. And it just means that you're nice and limber. Your muscles are nice and elasticated, ready for your lift. You go into your lift, and I never feel so whenever I stretch out my hips, and so I went cliff diving in Ibiza and I hyperextended them. I hyperextended my legs, I should say. Whenever I stretch out my hips, they
Because I've heard this story a few times, but I'd just like to picture it. Do you mean when you go like that?
My legs went. I used to do pencil and they
What, so
just went.
you did like, oh.
Shit, no, but it's
Wait,
ruined
you were
my
doing like a pencil dive and then you're like split and went.
hip. Yeah, but pencil down, feet first, and
Yeah.
it went shoof, because the water was completely still, and you're not meant to cliff dive when the water's still. You're meant to do it when it's choppy, because it breaks up the impact. And it was fucking awful. And it was really bad. And I woke up that night. Like, this is one of James's great nights as a husband. I woke up that night and I couldn't move. My whole body had seized up and I was lying there like this. And I was in so much pain and I burst out crying. And I woke him up and he was amazing. Obviously, it's Ibiza, so like everything's 24 hour. He got me like anti-inflammatories. He's a rugby player, so you know exactly what to do. And he fucking saved me. If I'd been on my own, I would have panicked. I couldn't move. I physically couldn't move. And then we found out the next day that the girl that one of the girls we did it with, she compressed her spine. She had to have spinal surgery like a week later. And my other friend, Jay Trey, one of my best friends, he punctured a lung. So it was really fucking bad. And nobody should be fucking cliff diving
I know,
unless
I was
you're
going to say, if you take anything from this episode,
a.
do not cliff dive.
Yeah. So James was the only one who didn't get hurt, obviously, because look at
Oh,
him.
and also, shockingly, he's used to like
Yeah,
massive
massive.
men smashing
Of
in.
course. But look at him. He's, you know, 21 stone of muscle. I mean, he's a
Yeah, but then
monster.
don't you think, like, you know, that's more force going down onto the same.
Yeah, but I mean, it's also like, I mean, it was muscle. Mine was joint. Jason's was, I mean, the other two was bone. Yeah, it was really bad. It was really fucking bad. Anyway, so where was I going with this? Yeah, so now when I stretch, I come down into my hips, right? And I really stretch out my hips, and it all just goes click, 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 and I go from being very stiff and very kind of lateral, and then I can go below parallel. So it's really important that I do that before a squat, because if I try to do that without opening up my hips with a really heavy weight on my back, I could absolutely see myself seizing up and not being able to stand up, and that's dangerous. So I do think it's very important, but it doesn't have to be some massive, you know, demonstrative thing. I literally just work my way up and I move my whole body and I stretch my body out and move all my joints through my shoulders. And yeah, there's a file on it, so do it. We don't really care about cool downs. More than happy if you guys just do 5 minutes of a little cardio machine at really low intensity and then fuck off home. If you're walking home, that's enough of a cool down.
Fuck off home.
Just get home, babe.
Yeah. I would say especially in the winter though, or when it's still cold, like just make sure, because not in the summer, a 15-minute walk to the gym and then a bit of stretching is probably all you need. In the winter, you probably do need to do a little bit of cardio when you get there. Or I know I do because I'm freezing when I get there.
Definitely, yeah. And make sure you wrap it nice and warm on that walk.
Okay, Julie's saying, how many carbs is considered low carb on 1600 calories a day? So technically, a low carb diet is like under 100 grams.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and I would
I
say
wouldn't stress about the exact amount. And even in that study I was reading today, it's like, okay, so what they see is that low carb and ketogenic diets reduce hunger and potentially make it easier for people to stick to lower calories. But what we don't really know yet is exactly how low carb you need to go to
yeah.
get the appetite suppressant effect, and whether even lower is even better, you know, like whether it's like, okay, well, you know, if you went to only 50 grams, then you'd be even more satiated, or if actually you kind of saturate the benefit and you could have more carbs.
But also calories. It's within what calorie bracket are we talking about? Because that it's not only macronutrients that are going to have effect. It's also basic calories. I've done low calorie, like incredibly low calorie, like 1200 calorie diets going low carbs. I was fucking starving because of my calories. Like, so again, like it's there is a nuance. There's a Venn diagram there. I would say as well, like I would say anything under 2 grams of carbohydrates per 1 kg of lean mass, I would consider to be starting to go low carb at that point. But I think in terms of a ketogenic diet, carbs are what percentage? Like
Oh, ridiculously, like you almost want to like
5%?
it
5%
as little as
total
possible.
calories. Maybe even less. So that's real ketogenic diet. And I think there's a bit of a misunderstanding that ketogenic diet means low carb, high fat, high protein. It's like, no, it is like 90% coming from fat. Is it, yeah, it's like 90, no,
So
it's
very
yeah,
low protein.
very, very low protein and an even lower carbohydrate. And honestly, unless you've been recommended it by your doctor or dietitian, say if you're epileptic or whatever the reasons are, there are certain types of cancers where it might be something that is recommended. Unless you are recommended it by a specialist who's treating a disease that you are experiencing, that your body is going through right now, absolutely not recommended.
Agree. The other interesting thing about hunger is that you'd think like the lower calories you go, the hungrier you'll be, kind of thing. But actually, a lot of people experience really low hunger when they fast.
Yeah, but are they exercising as well? Because again, I think that's another gray area. Because if
Yeah.
I could do low calorie and be fine. I know how to eat low calorie and be fine. But if I'm hitting 10 to 15K steps a day and doing 5 workouts a week, one second.
Well, oh yeah, no, you certainly wouldn't want to be doing that. I just mean what I think is quite interesting, and I don't have the research to back this up, but I actually think anywhere between sort of like 1200 plus. Oh, I was like, is Chloe talking to me? No, she's talking to someone. Yeah, I
Sorry.
think anywhere like
I was just like,
from like 1200 up, I actually think, you know, like just low calories, that'd be hard. But when you go either fasting or very low, so like these kind of 600 calorie a day meal replacement, you know, what you would do in type 2 diabetes remission type stuff, people experience quite low hunger. But I think it's because they're eating so little, you know, and like, and then it's like food, the enjoyment of food has kind of been taken away. Whereas on 1200, you can still eat enough that you're like, oh, I want some more. Whereas when you're almost eating nothing, it's like that choice has literally been taken away. Like, you're
yeah.
not going to have much nice on 600 calories a day.
No. And also the thing, when you're going ultra, ultra low calorie like that, like we say, one, you're probably not exercising. Or I don't think anyone would recommend that you were. And two, you are going to be in a state of ketosis. Your body is going to have to start producing ketones for you to have energy. Therefore, you are going to experience less hunger. So it's really interesting. And there's so many caveats, and you can hear Emma and I like bouncing back and forth and like, yeah, well, what about that? Well, actually, did you know that? Yeah, but then you consider this. And it's like, this is why it's just really not as simple. There are no absolutes. There really aren't. You know, if I go ultra low calorie, am I going to experience less hunger? And it's like, well, it depends who are we talking to and what are your body goals here? Because if you're trying to get toned and you're in the gym, like working out, it's the fucking worst thing you could do.
Yeah. And remember, a lot of this research is done on obese people who have a lot of
Yes.
weight to
And
lose.
this is another huge problem. There's very little people researching a physique community. I mean, it's off the top of my head, five like physique scientists in the world right now. But yeah, a lot of this data is done on an obesogenic community and often men as well, which is annoying.
Oh, well, that was the other thing that was linked to poor adherence, was being a woman.
Yeah. Shocked.
Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, obviously I can see why, like, it's important to fund research on obesity that's not really that important to, oh, look, this lean person got slightly leaner doing this. Like, no one cares. It's not really like life-changing impactful, is it? So I can see
Yeah.
why it's been done in those populations, and I agree that that should be funded. But then the issue is, don't extrapolate that out and assume that it applies to you if you're not in that same situation. But you're right, like, there's so many what is seemingly like quite contradictory things. Like I just said there, like, okay, well, this one study showed that people don't adhere very well to a low carb diet, and then actually this other piece of research is saying, well, your hunger will be reduced, so you'll adhere more. All right, okay, well, is the issue that as much as you have reduced hunger, the fact that you want to eat carbs is actually outweighing that, you know, like the fact that you want to have a social life, and over a 2 year period, this actually harder to stick to.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's many reasons that
And
things are
we talk
completely
about the
fine.
macronutrients and we talk about ketogenesis and we talk about, going low calorie. We haven't even touched on body fat levels yet. It's there's so much that goes into it. And I agree with you, obviously, it's much more important. While we're on this, have you seen, I don't know how, I mean, I obviously don't trust the press because I know firsthand how complete fucking nonsense they are. But have you
Huberman.
seen
Are
some? What?
you about to say Andrew Hubert then?
No, I'm about to say some of the like Kardashian Jenner lot and like their how, and again, I don't know how accurate it is, read the press and stuff, but like how uncomfortably, unhealthily unwell they're all starting to look and whether or not it's a result of his Ozempic. I don't think I've seen it go that far yet. And if this is the beginnings of it going that far, it's quite worrying because you're like, oh, you're malnourished, you
Yeah.
don't look well. Like, and again, we talk about if in the physique world, when these competitors, especially the small athletes who typically really well, they often are, but aren't always on anabolic aids, like in the bikini division, when you see those girls in real life, they don't look well. They look well up there with the hair, the makeup, the tan, and the muscle showing, but they don't look well. These guys don't even have that kind of muscle mass, so you're like, you're not in a good way. And it's just the first, it's kind of the first wave of Ozempic users I'm seeing that actually make me worry about health, ironically.
Competitors will start using it.
Oh, 100%.
I've
If it's
never really
not
thought of it in
paid,
that context, but I was like, yeah, I mean, why,
of course.
realistically, why wouldn't you?
Of course. Of course. If it's not fucking clenbuterol or Anavar, it's, Ozempic or,
Well, I mean, all of them probably, but it starts to, like, to me, the impressive part of like seeing an amazing physique and how lean someone's gotten on is how much work's gone into it.
absolutely.
Whereas now, if it's like, well, we can just suppress your appetite, I don't know. It doesn't, like, it's
But
not as impressive.
we would say that because we love physique goals and we love what physique says about somebody's willpower. And just like being a professional athlete in any way, it doesn't have to be physique. It could be a fucking professional NBA player. Like watching LeBron James play is like a fucking joke. Do you know what I mean? Is it LeBron James that I'm thinking of? Yeah. But and it applies to any sport, including bodybuilding, which I know people don't think is a sport, but it is, in our opinion. That's how we see it. It's more about genetics than skill, but actually when you take a much wider lens and step back, so is all sport. So there's that. But you're right, when you take that, there's no way in hell that competitors on stage at the Olympia recently weren't taking it, because why wouldn't you? Of course you would, to suppress appetite, get on with it and not be in, prep hell. But yeah, it does. It changes the game. It's changed the world of dieting forever. Forever. And I don't think I've been able to say that in my lifetime so far. Maybe tracking, but most people don't want to, aren't inclined to do that.
But the other thing it has changed, or I think has the potential to change when it's rolled out to the right people, is maybe like the obesity problem.
Oh, absolutely. No. I am not hating on Ozempic or Ozempic users at all. What I'm saying is, I don't, again, and I don't know how accurate this is, and I'm holding my hands up and saying this might be an ignorant statement to make. This is the first wave of people very much in the public gaze, obviously on it, and actually not ironically going the other side of this pendulum swung again. What a surprise, and looking pretty unwell because of it. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, I think it, I mean, the issue is obviously when already healthy weight people like the Kardashians start taking it.
Yeah. Well, one of my friends who will remain nameless was the first person I knew, and this was last summer, who started taking Ozempic, who was already skinny. And I remember I was on holiday with her, we were at a wedding, and I was like, you're too thin. Like, it doesn't look good. You look unwell. Please stop taking it. And she did. And she looks much better for it now. But yeah, if you're already in a healthy weight bracket and you start taking that, it's not comfortable. Please just stop eating. I mean, I would love to know. Is anyone on the EC method on it or has been on it? I'd love to know exactly what your appetite, I guess, changes to, and actually how much do you eat on it? Because everyone I know is still drinking on it. I don't know anyone who's having food on it.
Yeah, interesting. Right, okay. Okay, I asked this on the post, but since I managed to make it to the real live, yay, love you both, wanted to ask, what is the science behind having no appetite while grieving? Going through a tough time at the moment, and my appetite is pretty low and all over the place. I'm still doing all the right things, just curious if there's a hormone responsible for this. Just constantly a little nauseous, and I know some people go the other way.
It's a stress hormone. It's cortisol, it's even adrenaline, it's stress hormone flooding your body, and any hormone at all can have a knock-on impact, well, will have a knock-on impact on your hormonal homeostasis and can affect your appetite. Also, in terms of like your mental energy, and everyone deals with things differently. Some people eat more, some people stop eating. In terms of your mental energy, you're so all consumed by this thing, this big, heavy cloud that's just constantly right there on you and in you. The last thing you're thinking about is food, and like you would do if you were happy and carefree. And it's a hormonal response. It's also a psychological response. I was talking to Emma about this today, bandwidth. You only have so much bandwidth to handle so much when you're going through a hard time. And I speak from first-hand experience. It's hard. It's really hard.
I think the other thing that I've definitely felt in these situations is like you feel quite like fight or flight. Like you probably even notice that your heart rate's a little bit higher, and you're just like there is that. I think it, I don't know exactly what adrenaline does in relation to appetite suppression, but it definitely does. And from like an evolutionary standpoint, it probably makes sense, right? If you're in this kind of like high alert state, when you eat,
Yeah.
you can't run away, you know, you can't like move it. You're obviously going to be distracted by eating. And I think, you know, just as you were talking to being like, oh, when you're happy and kind of carefree, it's much easier to eat. But when you're like anxious and stressed and like often you then don't want to eat because you're in this like heightened, like kind of over aroused state.
Oh, absolutely. No, adrenaline does suppress appetite to a huge degree. Huge degree. Yeah, I remember I used to say to James, like, oh, when you come off, like, do you crave anything? Like, do you even go to the toilet? And he was like, no, like when they're in half time and they're playing, especially international rugby, he's like, no, your adrenaline's so high, like you're focused. Like, that's it. Same when you're pregnant, like, you go into labor. They're like, try and eat, but a lot of women will eat and it will literally, it won't even digest, it won't even make its way down their GI tract. It will literally come back up. Like, it's a whole mine, I had a bit of a peach and it came up as like a whole bite of the peach I'd just taken. It just came out and I was like, cool, well, I'm not eating.
You not think to chew that, babe?
It's just like, ugh. Do you know what's so weird? One of my friends, Glenn, he got really drunk once on a night out and he was eating chips. I was watching him eat chips and he wasn't swallowing them whole. He vomited them up about half an hour later and they came up whole. I'm
That's
sorry, is that
crazy.
not weird? Like, they re-esterified in him. I'm like, this is very strange, Glennie. What's happening?
He's really weird.
I know, right? Okay.
Okay, dearest Clemmer, I hope you're both well. I just wanted to let you know how much I'm enjoying this round's home-weighted upper and lower workouts. Well, they
Yeah,
play.
a few people have said that. It makes me so happy.
Sarah, that was so helpful. Makes so much sense. Thank you. It helps me to disconnect a bit from the emotion and discomfort of it all by knowing it's just a biology thing, and then I can push through a little easier. Yeah, I mean, one thing, it does make a lot of sense, right? Because now you know it's about biology thing, and you're kind of in this over aroused, over stimulated state. what can you do to bring yourself out of that, or to bring yourself down a little bit? And whether that is like grounding techniques or box breathing or a little bit of meditation or like a bath or something, like you might find that you then can eat like a decent dinner if you've like taken some time to kind of like come down from that. I do think it's harder with grief than anything else, because that's a harder one to kind of
It's
step
all.
away.
I listened to a really interesting podcast once. It was a journalist, and it's so funny. I think he was worked for the New York Times. I'll find this for you and I'll put it up. Anyone who's grieving, listen to it. It was enlightening is the only word for it. He hated cats, and one day he went home to his New York apartment, and there was a cat there, and it followed him in, and it just didn't leave. And he didn't like the cat, but he felt bad. So he was like, fine, the cat can stay. And the cat stayed for like a few years, and then the cat died. And he was shocked by the grief that hit him. He said nobody in his life had ever died before. He'd never had pets. Obviously, he hated cats. So it just absolutely knocked him physically, so much so that he was signed off work for a few weeks for bereavement period. And because he's a journalist, and this is how journalists think, he was like, why do we grieve? Like, why do we grieve? If everything about us is made up of survival instinct, what is the fucking point of grief? So he started delving into it, and it was incredible. What he found was that it's a survival instinct based on when we were tribe communities. And it's looking for your lost tribe member because they brought an element of survival to your tribe. They were important to your tribe. And a lot of the theories around why we feel like we need to see dead bodies in order to get closures because it comes from that. We needed to see it to know that there was no going back for this member of the lost tribe, and it wasn't going to help our survival. And then on you trudge, and that's kind of what we talk about closure, or in terms of a relationship, new people coming in, and you know that door's closed now, and all of a sudden it's, even though it's horrible, it's easier to get over it. It happens a lot quicker. And it's a really interesting podcast. I think it was on the moth. What I'll do is I'll find it because I'm sure if I just Google the premise of it, it'll come up and I'll put it up. And I just thought at the time when I listened to it, I was going through a horrible breakup, and someone sent it to me and said, listen to this. And it really fucking helped. So I'll put it up, and maybe it'll help you or anyone else
I'd
who's going
like to
through.
listen to that.
It's really interesting.
Yeah, because that is, it is an interesting thing. Like most things, most feelings, most emotions, most like human traits are linked back to some kind of benefit in terms of evolution and survival. And then it's like figuring out what that is.
And he was basically saying that I couldn't get out of bed, and I couldn't function. And he was like, and I just thought, what the fuck? This would not help me survive out in the wild. Like, what the fuck? And so he delved into it, and he talked to loads and loads of psychologists, and it was just really interesting. I will try and find it. I always think it helps when you're going through a really emotionally hard time to try and, I don't know, put some logic or fact behind it, you know, or history, and also not feeling like you're alone. And you
Yeah,
know,
I think the exact same with like things like overeating. You know, people build it up so much to be like a character flaw, and that they're an awful person because they've overeaten, and like, you know, they must just be greedy and inherently like gluttonous and all this stuff. And then when you look like, okay, let's take a step back and look at evolution, and let's look at genetics. Of course you're driven to overeat. It's nothing but, you know, it's not a bad thing about you. In fact, it's, you know, people have made points before that it's actually like weird that more people don't overeat. You know, like you are having, you do need to change because this is the environment we live in now. So it's not saying just accept your genetics, but of course it's hard. Like that's your drive, that's your human instinct, is to do that.
Yeah, 100%. And also, just while we're on the grooving and not being able to get calories in, and pick the low hanging fruit, get the ready made protein shakes, you know, especially if you're saving money on not, you know, doing your standard weekly grocery shop, get the pre made protein shakes. Things like, yeah, we talked about this last time, chocolate, dark chocolate dipped nuts, like chocolate covered peanuts, shit like that. That's going to help you kind of keep that. Really, ideally, muscle mass, which is so important for your health in terms of like your long-term quality and quantity of life. Really keep that muscle mass on you, and just do the easy things that you can do that don't make you feel like, oh, you're like force feeding yourself.
Okay. Hi. Wondered if we could have a couple of quick split workouts. I'm doing the dumbbell full body over and over, which I love for its simplicity, repetition, and speed. I find the other way workouts take too long. I'm still partly post-surgery, 54, obviously menopausal and need short, sharp workouts to make me do it. Thank you. You don't want to do split body workouts unless you're training like 6 days a week.
Yeah, exactly. And also, like, I mean, it's a quick full body dumbbell workout for a reason, because it is what it says on the tin. It's a quick full body dumbbell workout. And I get this quite a lot, I can't lie, with people who are like, there's a very specific workout that's there for a very specific reason, using a specific type of equipment, a specific body part, and there's a reason to it. And they're like, can we have more of these? And it's like, I can try do an alternative one, but it is that for a reason. Like, that's why it is so specific. Like, so you know what? I can try do like an upper lower quick dumbbell for you. And then you've got some more stuff to add into the mix. So I'm more than happy to do that. We upload the new workouts, what, next week anyway? So I'll just throw that in there. Fine. But it is there for a
To do as
reason.
well, just to make like, because there are already so many workouts there. Like, one of the issues for us is not to overwhelm people with the amount of workouts that are there, and you're about
Preach.
to get a whole nother block. But if you just want to make them quicker, drop a set. Like, it's the same. The thing is, the basics are the basics because they work. If Chloe does a quick workout, it's going to have the same movements in it.
Oh,
You're
yeah.
going to do less sets.
Do your presses, you're gonna do your rows, you're gonna do your pushes and your pulls. So it's like, it's that simple. But look, I'll throw a couple more up there. But Emma's right, just so we're clear, we really don't want to overwhelm all the workouts in the app. You don't need different app. You don't need different workouts every 3 months, let alone every 6 months, let alone every 3 months. You just don't. Like, and we say it, the basics for a reason. You have your presses, you have your squats, you have your deadlifts, you have your rows, and then your little bit of bicep and a little bit of tricep, and kabah, you're done. Like, it's not that complicated. And it's just a huge misconception that you need to be doing different workouts all the time. Now, we do get that you guys get bored, but fuck me, at the moment there's a load of different workouts on the current app, and we're not trying to overwhelm you, so there is stuff to choose from.
Sorry, I'm just laughing because do you want
Why?
to see what Zoe just sent me?
Always. That her dog?
I think it's her mum's dog.
Oh my God. It looks like it's just
This is
escaped
her
from
dog.
prison. Oh, she looks really hot there. It looks like it's escaped from prison.
Know.
Andy Dufresne. Say close to Andy Dufresne.
Elizabeth, that's interesting. As you know, I'm going through. Should I have not said this person's name? I'm just going to leave this comment. It's actually not that important.
Okay.
Just in case. I can't remember. I think she said to us not to name. Anyway, let's move on.
Okay. Well,
we've
maybe.
we've not done any questions and it's been an hour.
No, we've done loads on the live, haven't we?
Well, maybe like three.
Okay. Well, I was
I mean, I
just.
think it's been somewhat interesting and useful, hopefully.
I find it strange when people tag us on the page for coaching while we're doing a live.
Yeah, I know.
Just come on the live,
Oh,
guys.
okay. She doesn't mind if she says the name. Okay, so she's saying, as you know, I'm going through a separation right now, and I had bronchitis last week, and a friend told me that in traditional Chinese medicine, lung illness is linked to grief, which makes so much sense. Yeah, you can get like physically ill, you know, and
Oh.
people die of like heart attacks very quickly after their partners died of like a heart.
I've been more poorly in the last, I would say, year of my life than I've ever been in my life. And I mean, clients on the EC method will know, like, wow, this girl's immune system for a poster child of health and fitness. It's because I
But
can
then
stress.
do you think it's also Bodhi? Oh no, because she's not really at like nursery or anything, is she? Yeah.
No, it's stress. It's stressing. Like, I was just looking then at my rash. It's getting loads better. But yeah, that's a result of respiratory infection. And I've had everything. I've had ear infections, eye infections, sinusitis, tonsillitis, chest infections. Like, I've
Remember
had
those
everything.
sexy selfies that you were sending me? What was wrong with you then?
But my face was like, I
I
looked like
don't know
that.
what happened. That was.
That was crazy. It's really hard on the immune system. It's stress, grief. It's tough. It's look, guys, I'm with you. Like, as I was saying in the beginning of the live, I put a brave face on it, and I'm really fucking proud of myself. And I never thought ever in my life I would have the strength that I've had, but it has been the hardest time of my life. And I won't. I'm not going to talk more about it because I'll cry. I'm also on my period, so I have no self-control over tears. But it is, this is why I also love the EC method, and we talk about it. We are like a group. We are women. We are women for women, and we're a family, and we make each other laugh and evidently cry. And it's just nice to know that I've cried all day, evidently. But like, just this whole chat, even just talking to Emma about health and fitness, it cheers me up so much. Like, it's such a lifeline. So we love you guys, and we know that you love us, and long may the EC continue.
Yeah, to be fair, we have some very exciting things coming up over the summer, and not just saying that, like, there are
or because we need to announce it. We've been talking about it for a while, but we do have some announcements, which we said we would make in the halfway point. Again, we really, really don't want to overwhelm you guys, so we like to wait till the halfway point, and then we just start dropping bombs. It's really, really not the political climate to make jokes like that, or I should say use terminology like that. So anyway, let's move on.
Great.
Okay, should we do one more from this?
Yeah.
Is that an hour?
Yeah.
Okay, Lucy. Hi, ladies. I think I would be able to commit to working out for shorter periods of time rather than one full workout 3 times a week. And finding time is the hardest for me with a busy house and an unsupportive partner. I think all women can relate to that. I only just started to get my sleep back now when my youngest is turning 5. So getting up really early sounds like torture after all the shifts. Oh, no, she can come in. We're on the last question. Yeah. Hi, baby. But getting up early feels like torture. I really need to recover, but getting up 20 minutes earlier is fine. And I love how it makes me feel the rest of the day. How can I split my workouts, please? Will I still need a day off if I split and have them shorter? Thank you. Emma, you do short workouts, don't you? How do you do this?
Hello, Bodhi.
Hi. Hi. Right, go on.
Sorry, it always distracts me how cute she is.
I know, it's very disappointing.
So can you do short workouts? Yes, absolutely. I actually think there are loads of benefits to doing short workouts as well. And if that's what suits you and that's what's going to help you become more consistent, I think that's a great thing. Some of the other benefits of like elevated mood afterwards, like you don't need a long workout to get that kind of elevation of mood. And then often people find it easier to get into a daily routine. I certainly do. So, you know. 3 workouts a week, I'm like, oh, but then some days I'm not, and some days I'm like, oh God, I don't really know what's going on.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're like, do you know what? 5 days a week, Monday to Friday, I do my morning 20-minute workouts, fine. Some people be like, oh, but what about, I don't know, like, will you recover from each one? Well, you start small and you build it up.
Yeah.
That's how. So like if you start doing a workout every morning and you're not recovering from it, either start with every other day and then increase, or do slightly less so that you can recover from it. But it's all fitness. It's like, you know, like there's no absolute that people can't recover from. It's just really how fit they are. And then the consideration of like, are you sleeping well? Are you fueling yourself well? Are you also in a deficit? Like, how much of your life do you want to put towards this? You know, like CrossFit athletes train 2 to 3 times a day.
Yeah.
But they also take their recovery very seriously and they're extremely fit. So it's not like you can't recover from these things. It's just you need to meet yourself where you are and slowly push yourself around your life balance. Like, I certainly couldn't train 3 times a day, nor do I want to.
Ugh. We have to be a professional, like a professional athlete. I mean, we have lives. Hello. Some of us have children. Right, go on.
That was it. What was the rest of the question?
I just wondered if there was anything on the live.
Oh, right. Just Polly saying your body is so clever, it tells you so much about your emotions. Yeah.
Mine's telling me I'm on my period today. Okay. Are you okay? Okay, gang. Well, we are back on Friday at 3. It's Good Friday. I'm so sorry. I know it's distracting, but I will not have childcare because it's Good Friday. And we are a Christian country. A Church of England country. Christian country.
We're a family here. Bodhi's very welcome.
He-Man, little He-Man. Okay, love you guys. See you
love
Friday.
You all. Bye.